welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast.
Windhorst and the Hoop Collective.
Thank you, Andrew. Well, what are we supposed to do?
Please subscribe, rate, or review to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective.
No, thank you. No singing. What's going on? No theme songs allowed.
What's going on?
In Boston is Jackie McMullen. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you're doing well. And in Dallas, where he's just back from Houston, where he was at the Mavericks-Rockets game last night, which we're going to talk about in a minute, is Band McMahon. And you're going off somewhere else, McMahon. Where are you going?
I'm headed to San Antonio, although the Mighty Mavs are trying to make me adjust my priorities and have Mavs travel be a big part of my thing. But, yeah, I'm heading to San Antonio to see Rockets Spurs, two sub-500 teams. Who would have thunk that? Ooh. But first tonight, it is the 7th grade girls A-team season opener that I flew home
for. Oh, okay. Good.
Love that you did that.
Nice. Your Dallas Mavericks are here
sixes.
In LA. Right.
What's that?
Well, at least five.
Some Curry sixes. Yeah.
That was a beautiful gesture. That you're referring to is Steph Curry answering that girl's letter. It was a beautiful gesture, and also, just because I'm a cynical SOB, a great marketing gesture for Under Armour. Am I wrong, or am I just a cynical SOB?
No, yeah. Yeah, but that's okay. It's okay, because you know what? You can accomplish both, and I'm good with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The main thing and the little girl wanted the Under Armour. It wasn't like, you know, the little girl wanted the Under Armour. You know, they had already done the sale. Yeah.
That's it.
Am I a cynical bastard, McMahon?
You're cynical.
Who wears makeup?
I would never call you a bastard. If I was going to call you a cynical, I was going to call you a cynical B word, I'd pick another B word.
I see. Fair enough. You've said it before off record. Your Mavericks are out here in LA. I'm always running into the Mavericks in LA, perpetually running. I feel like they play here 8 times a year because I'm always running into them. I run into Dirk at the hotel here all the time on the regular.
There you go.
But, you're playing the Lakers.
Into them on a basketball court sometime soon.
Yeah,
so Tim, that's one of my questions. What's your ETA for Dirk? What's your ETA?
Soon. I would say first half of December. You know, maybe even first week. He's practicing. You know, he's trying to chip off really a full off season of rust. And as Dirk put it, he's playing in the staff games. You know, where they have like the rebounding interns and whatnot play. And Dirk said it was, I don't know, a week or so ago. He goes, I'm not the best player in those games yet, so still some work to be done.
Right.
So Mavericks put it on the Rockets last night.
Yeah, they sure did.
You know, and D'Antoni, look, Luka was awesome, as he has been all the way through here. I know he's had a bad game or two. By the way, as a real quick aside, I was at the Clippers Suns game last night. And I'm not going to evaluate DeAndre Ayton. This is the first time I've ever seen him in person, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to evaluate him in one game or whatever. But Boban wrecked Ayton
took it
last
to him.
Night.
Ayton admitted it from what I saw.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a good Boban game. Boban was a little bit off, like he was missing bunnies. Gortat was a late scratch. His back tightened up, and they put Boban in really near tip-off. And Ayton just – like I was watching him during the game. He just didn't know what to do with him. And he had – I mean, I haven't watched every game, but the Suns folks were saying it was his worst game. I think he had 4 points. He completely couldn't do anything. But I know Lucas had a bad game here or there. But it seemed like with the story that you wrote was more about like boy, Rockets,
well,
you know, no depth, what about the Mavs, man?
Right, and you know, I'm going to have to jump back on the little Mavs bandwagon here. And look, it's not like, okay, wow, they looked good last night. They've looked really good for most of the month. I mean, this is 8 out of 10 that they've won. You know, and look, They caught Golden State without Steph and Draymond. They caught OKC without Russ. Da, da, da. But they're not just beating teams. I mean, they beat the Celtics. I mean, they beat the Jazz by 50. Of course, the Jazz have some problems of their own. But, I mean, they're really manhandling teams. And as great as Luka has been, and he's, you know, clearly the front runner for Rookie of the Year. I mean, he is consistently not only good but really fun to watch. But the Mavericks are killing teams because they have – arguably the best bench in the league. I mean, J.J. Barea and the boys absolutely destroy teams on a regular basis. And that's what happened last night. J.J. Barea, Devin Harris, you know, they're one healthy guy from Wurzburg, Germany, Maxi Kleber, Dwight Powell. They're all like plus 25 against the Rockets.
Yeah.
And if you look at their net ratings, you know, in this streak and, you know, really for the whole season, I mean, their bench absolutely dominates people. Little J.J. Barea, if he keeps rolling like this, is got a chance to be a legit six-man of the year candidate.
I was looking at his numbers because, you know, he's a Northeastern kid. I used to go watch him play, and I'd be alone in the gym, you know. And I saw 17.6 points per 100 possessions better offensively with J.J. Barea on the floor than off during those six wins. That's a big number. That is a big, big number.
Jackie with that J.J. Barea stat at the ready as if, like, you knew we were talking about J.J. Barea. That was impressive, Jackie. Wow.
Hey, if you watched last night, you knew we were going to be talking about Jose Juan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw him, you know, I saw him destroy the Celtics.
Yeah,
can we just say for 1 minute, because I do love to talk about names, Dorian Finney-Smith. Shouldn't he be standing on the podium to accept an Academy Award, right?
Yeah, it's a good name. They call him
Academy Award.
He's also got a great nickname. They call him Dodo. And by the way,
statue.
Hey, he's a good player too. He's a guy who's got a nice bright future in this league as far as a 3-and-D guy. Matter of fact, I would say as far as obviously they're building this thing around Luka long term, I would say in the under 25 group of players that they have, Dorian Finney-Smith might have the best chance to be a long term fit with the Mavericks. And you know, you can kind of figure out what that means for a guy who was a lottery pick last year.
You know, right. On that draft night trade, that just felt like a momentous moment to me. It just like as it unfolded, it just was like, man, this is a really big thing that just happened. And you cannot evaluate rookie point guards this early in their career. It's really unfair. But you know, Trae Young is, I think, shooting 24% on threes, which smaller guards especially tend to have struggles as they learn how to create space. He's dead last in defensive RPM the last time I looked. I mean, he's had some moments where you're like, wow, look at him as a playmaker. Look how he can throw passes. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that the Hawks are really excited about, I mean, I don't think they have regrets. But with every Dallas win, the draft pick that they got is worsening.
Well, I was going to say, I know they thought that pick was going to be in that 7 to 11 range. And look, it's early and the West is so stacked that, you know, we'll see how things shake out. But the Mavericks are a game over 500 right now.
Yeah, I was talking to Rachel
about
this.
There's a lot of basketball.
Because it's
a lot of basketball.
I was talking about,
right?
I was talking about draft night trades. The Tatum-Fultz trade was not made on draft night, right, Jackie? It was a couple days earlier.
No. Right before. Yep.
And the reason that the trades are a little bit different, even though the Mavericks probably had a pretty good idea when the draft started that they were gonna be able to move up to three, nobody really 100% knew what the Kings were gonna do. Like the Bagley stuff started to get out like that afternoon, but like executives in the league were scrambling. What are the Kings gonna do? What are the Kings gonna do? So maybe Dallas kind of knew as the draft was starting that they were gonna have a good shot of moving up. But the other thing about it is which direction the pick went. One of the reasons why the and Rachel Nichols pointed this out on the jump today because we were talking about it. One of the reasons why the Celtics-Sixers trade is so amazing is that the what appears to be the better player and the pick went to Boston.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case,
yeah, exactly.
You can't, you know, you don't know what that pick's going to be. So it's really not just Trey versus Luka. It's also, you know, what that pick becomes. And who knows, maybe the pick is the seventh pick, and maybe they get another guy that ends up being a core piece for them. So, but that said,
but the Mavericks will say, you know, hey, even if the Hawks end up with two core pieces, they feel like they've got a franchise centerpiece. You know, that was
sure.
That was the thought when they made the deal, sure. and obviously nothing that's happened since then has done anything whatsoever to change their minds on that. I tell you what, you mentioned the Kings, and you know they're a fun team to watch. De'Aaron Fox has been unreal this year, and they get out and run. But can you imagine how promising they would be? Forget the pick that they still owe, but how promising they would be if they would have drafted either Luka yeah. or Jaren Jackson Jr., a kid who I got to see up close in Memphis for a couple games for the first time. I mean,
what do you think?
Bagley's not.
What do you think of him? I just think Jaren Jackson is going to be a 15-year,
oh,
17-time
defensive player of the year kind of guy. I mean,
yeah,
he
exactly.
Now against the Raptors, he picked up two fouls in the first 50 seconds, and you know, just never got any kind of rhythm. Was a non-factor, and that, you know, they lost to the Knicks, but he was unreal in that game. He had seven block shots, and I mean, some of them were like a foot over the rim. You know. Just swooping in and swatting it. He was 6-6 from the floor, 4-4 from 3-point range. I mean, he is a long, athletic, 6'11" guy who can knock down a three on one end, run down on the other end, and swat a shot off the glass. He just turned 19. He looks like a baby. I firmly believe that Luka Doncic and Jaren Jackson Jr. will be the best players in this draft. And I mean, and both of them are going to be really, really good.
You went to Memphis this week to sort of check in on the Grizzlies, and then they dropped two games right in front of you. I know.
Well, they blame me for that, and I told them thanks for bleeping up my story.
No kidding, huh? You know, I think what you said is true, Tim, but I also think, to Brian's point, it's just way too early for Atlanta to have buyer's remorse, because it wasn't that they didn't think Doncic was good. That's not why they
right.
passed on him. It's because they believed in Trae Young, and Trae Young, because of the way their team is constituted and because of his skill set and because of their lack of talent and the fact that they're in it for the long haul, I don't think we can possibly say whether he's going to work out for a while. I really
him. And like you said, they threw him to the Sharks, you know? Because they're not trying. You know, this is a tanking season for them. Now,
exactly
if he's got Zion Williamson catching lobs along with John Collins next year, and, you know, he spends his summer working on his game against, I mean, look, he could still end up being really, really good. But I do think Luka and Jaren Jackson Jr. are going to be special.
So about the Rockets, you know, D'Antoni after the game really talked about their lack of depth. And he said, I'm not blaming the front office. They're doing the best they can. There's no blame here. I thought it wasn't like somebody said to him, hey, are you blaming the front office? So I'm trying to, you know, you were at that press conference, I assume. I'm mm-hmm. very tempted to extrapolate that quote.
Okay, let me look up extrapolate, and then I'll see if I can't help you with that.
Because I'm trying to determine if it's like a thing where he's actually is blaming the front office,
if him
saying that I'm not blaming the front office is him saying I'm blaming the owner. Or
well,
neither.
You know what?
Or
C, I could see both of those, and I think I actually asked him the question. And I think he said, obviously, it's a problem. And then I think he, as he said it, he kind of realized, ooh, that could be taken as me calling out the front office. But look.
Okay.
Or maybe it was a sly way of doing it. But I think that there's, you know, he would be, you know, I think there's some accuracy in all of that. If he wants to blame the front office or the ownership, because here's the thing. Their big move to bolster the bench this year was going out and getting washed up Carmelo Anthony, who, you know, look, D'Antoni was willing to do it, but he wasn't saying, hey, bring me Melo after they had the fallout in New York. He realized Daryl Morey wanted it. Chris Paul wanted it. James Harden wanted it. He said, okay, I'll try to make it work. And then, you know, kind of told, I think Morey and folks behind closed doors, look, you know, if this doesn't work, well, we probably need to pull the plug pretty early. And that's what ended up happening. So that was their big move to bolster the bench. You know, they put a flyer in on Michael Carter Williams. He's so bad. He couldn't even play before garbage time last night when they've got a kid who's fresh out of the G League, a guy on a two-way contract, and a guy who was playing in the G League as their only bench players who actually got non-garbage time minutes. And then, you know, in terms of blaming the ownership, look, the luxury tax, you know, whether Tillman Fertitta wants to admit it or not, is a major, major factor for the Rockets. They let Luke Mbamute go because he got less than $2 million above the minimum. Now he's, you know, I think his health
he's
has
hurt.
Something to do with it. His concern
yeah,
about
he's also
durability.
Hurt again.
Right.
Yeah.
They were worried about his shoulder, but it's his knee. But the other thing is they did not use their mid-level. And
that's right.
Unless something changes, right. I'm not sure that they're going to be using their mid-level anytime soon because, you know, they're not only worried about luxury tax now, they're worried about repeater tax. And man, it's hard to fill out a roster when you've got two guys on max contracts. And, you know, as much as Capella was a deal for them, you know, he's going to be making between 16 and 18 mil.
Well, Jackie, you've been aware of Les Alexander for a long time. I know you respect him.
Yeah.
And
great.
He
was a little
right
spooky,
after he,
but,
yeah. Yeah, right after he traded for Chris Paul, he saw the writing on the wall and he, you know, he had his reasons for why he wanted to sell the team, but his timing on selling the team, I think, was prescient. What do you, I mean, didn't you sort of see that?
Yeah, and you know, Les Alexander was one of these, you wouldn't say he was a silent owner because he would do some, you know, once in a while, some sidelines, right?
Yep.
So it's not, he wasn't like he was this, you know, he wasn't like Mickey Aronson, who you never see and is one of those owners that will do whatever it takes. But he was one of those owners that would do whatever it takes. He had a great relationship with Daryl Morey. They talked all the time. He wanted to win. He genuinely loved the city, the franchise. And he is a philanthropic owner that the NBA has ever seen. He does it all quietly. And so when you don't care about your money, you don't mind spending it, right? That makes sense, doesn't it? So to compare him to any other owner, but you can't tell me that if Les, I do not believe if Les Alexander was still the owner of the Houston Rockets, you would roster that you have. I don't believe that.
I have to say real quick about Mickey Arison. There's a lot of NBA owners who are billionaires and they seem pretty stressed to me. You know, I just watched an interview with Wes Edens, who owns the Bucks, and he talked about how he had to fly 660 hours in his plane last year, and he was on the road for 200 days. And, you know, I know Dan Gilbert, and Dan is
were there violins playing while he said that?
Well, look, I'm just saying, this is my point. You know how Cuban, he's always running around. All these guys, you know, high stress. Josh
Man,
Harris, Cuban's, owner of the
Cuban 60, and his hair hadn't even gone gray yet. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's
about.
Right. Everything is 100% natural there. on that whole face, actually. It just
wow.
Put it this way: 15 years
Whoa.
Ago, 15 years ago,
hey,
when I met,
he's not wearing makeup.
That fair. Well, maybe not all the time, but Mickey Arison lives like a billionaire probably should live. Or they all want to live. He is got a perpetual tan. He always seems like he's got a because he comes to every game. He's the only team I've ever been around where the owner comes to practice on a regular basis. He comes to practice. He knows what's going on, but he just sits over there very quietly, just watches, never ever, as far as I know, really interferes. You know, lets Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra do their thing. Lets his son Nick, you know, go in and grind away. He looks like a very happy man. He dresses, you know, he never wears a suit. I maybe saw him in a suit like three or four times in 4 years. I think two of them were when they got the rings. He had to wear a suit in ring ceremony. He's always dressed down.
The White House. And at the White House.
Yeah, at the White House. That's right. He spends all of the summer on his yacht going around to various ports in the Mediterranean. Now, he's technically doing business because he owns Carnival Cruise Lines, and so he's checking in all these things. You know, he's having meetings. And
sure.
That is the life of a billionaire that I would aspire to. Mickey Arison has got it figured out. And one of the things that he does that is admirable is that he lets his team operate. You know, you go to these Thunder games, like Clay Bennett. I've never been to a Thunder game where Clay Bennett is not there. But like almost every game I've ever been to there, and I'm not checking every game, he's always in a suit. And it looks like he just came from the office and then he's going to the office on the way back. You know, I think Mickey's got it figured out.
If you talk to Pat Riley or any of those guys, when push came to shove, he would do what he needed to do to put his team over the top. And it's not a criticism, honestly, for those who decide, well, it's folly to do what you're asking me to do. It's too much money. I don't blame them. But you're very fortunate if you get a guy like Mickey Aronson or
and Tillman Fertitta says he will. But again, I'm just saying though, but hey, you say it, but then this mid-level is not used at all. And look, maybe it's their chip that they use in the buyout market, but I would be very surprised.
Well, I just, you know, their margin for error is just a lot smaller than it was a year ago. And, Chris Paul had the elbow injury. Now he's got a hamstring injury.
He doesn't play.
I mean, you know, in the last week, James Harden has had a 54-point game and a 41-point game, and they lost both.
And last night he had a 25-point, 17-assist triple-double, and they got blown out. It was fortunate for them they got blown out because he was actually able to sit for the final 7 minutes because he's averaging over 40 minutes per game in this four-game losing streak. But, you know, and look, with CP3, like, you cannot breathe that rare air of being a legitimate championship contender and then close the window. So you had to bring him back, and you understood what that was going to take when you made the trade for him, okay? It's not like that was a decision they made last summer. But the other thing with CP3 is, obviously, there's durability issues. He's getting older. And so, you know, he's more than likely going to play somewhere in that 60-ish range in terms of regular season games. So you're going to have to manage 15, 20 games without him and then cross your fingers and hope that he can stay healthy for a playoff run, which obviously he has not been fortunate enough to do so nearly as often as he would like last year included. And look, if they're 0-5 without him, and he's going to end up missing because of maintenance or, you know, maybe necessity with injuries, another 10 or 15 games, man, they've got to figure out a way to win when Chris Paul isn't there. And it ain't happening right now.
Yeah, and, you know, the problem is that they're losing ground, even though there isn't people running away and hiding. But, you know, under 500, 23 games in, I think they are, 23, 24. Again, no margin for error. They don't have a margin for error down later in the season.
They're only 20 in. Yeah, they're only 20 in.
So. 20, okay.
But still, hey, they are, while they're 9-11, it's not like they're buried under 500. They are the second to last place team in the Western Conference.
I saw that. So, you know, let's say that, you know, Harden sprains his ankle and misses six games in March. You know, you just eliminate your margin for error. Andrew, do you own any timepieces?
I do.
Not a watch. I'm not talking about a watch or, you know, something that tells you the time. Like, I'm talking about a piece of beautiful jewelry that also has the time on it.
I don't own that.
Well, do you know what everybody in the NBA wears as a timepiece?
I feel like you're going to tell me.
The answer is Tissot. Which is the official watch of the NBA. Tissot brings performance and style to the game by offering painstakingly accurate timekeeping and stylish and authentic watches. They're in charge of all the time. All those clocks and stuff are all Tissot clocks. You know, not as lovely as you put on your wrist, much more functional in an NBA game, but nonetheless very important. Tissot has worked with the league to introduce state-of-the-art shot clocks and integrated timing systems in all 29 NBA arenas. Not 30, Andrew. Staples Center has two teams, 29 NBA arenas. The first time they've done that, first time anyone's done that in league history, and ensure consistent timekeeping in each second of NBA gameplay. You can shop Tissot at us.tissotshop.com and at select, and I mean select, watch and jewelry stores nationwide. Follow hashtag ThisIsYourTime and Tissot.us on Facebook and Instagram for more information. And Andrew, it's the holidays, and if you were to buy me a Tissot watch this this holiday season, I wouldn't be angry at you. I just want to plant that little seed right now. Get the NBA fan in your life, and you know you're, you know, podcast producer. I guess you're in my life. Maybe I should consider one for you. A Tissot watch. Tissot Quicksters are 50% off, available only at us.tissotshop.com. That's us.tissotshop, T-I-S-S-O-T shop.com. Speaking of teams that are trying to get better, I know you're very attuned to the Jazz. How'd you feel about the Jazz move to get? I mean, it seems like it's an upside no-brainer to trade for Kyle Korver.
Yeah, and, you know, Burks is a guy who would show flashes here and there, but, you know, they never fully trusted him. They absolutely had to improve the spacing. Obviously, Korver can do that. You know, he's at the minimum.
I think they're 28th in three-point shooting. I think that's what
yeah,
I saw.
Yeah, right. They've got to improve the spacing. I'll say this, though. Other than Donovan Mitchell, Burks is really the only guy who could get it, who could create his own shot on that roster. But the spacing was obviously a major priority there. And, I was very surprised that when they started Jay Crowder in Sacramento at the four, which that's their best lineup. I mean, and it's not even close. It's their closing lineup. And if you look at the numbers, you know, going back to last year when he got there and this year, it's by far their most productive lineup. They start Crowder at the four in Sacramento, score season high 133 points, even though Mitchell didn't play in that game. And then I was shocked that Quinn Snyder went back to Derek Favors at the four the next night and they got blown out at home by Indiana. Because, I mean, look, it's not like Crowder's a lights-out three-point shooter, but he's at least a guy.
They started Favors at the four last night in Brooklyn, too.
They did it again last night, yeah.
Right, and so that surprised me, especially, you know, you do it one game, you light it up, and I haven't been able to talk to Quinn. I'm not sure why he went back to Favors, but, you know, for a team that spacing is such a priority, I do think playing small is something they've got to consider doing on a, you know, on a regular basis. I think they probably are going to have to move away from that too big lineup.
Well, on the other hand, I don't know.
Oh, no, last year when they went on that tear, 29-6, I think he was 43% from three-point range.
Right.
And
what is he right now? What is his season right now? I know it's not good.
I know it translates to UGLY, and he ain't got no alibi.
Yeah. All right then.
That was a Clipper Darryl reference there.
37% he's shooting. It's not a career low, in case you're one. But
yeah, and that's either. And by the way, that's not from three. That's from the floor.
No, that's just regular. Yeah, that's
31.6.
Oh, I thought that was from three.
I'm talking 37% from three. Oh. That's fine. Okay. You know,
you're happy with that. 31% from the three-point.
But here's the problem. Dante Exum, who, you know, young guy, fifth overall pick, they has been hurt a lot of his career. They invested in him again. Well, it was essentially a mid-level contract, but a bet on him. He's also shooting 37% from the floor, and he's even worse from three-point range at 27%. Donovan Mitchell shot pretty well. Donovan Mitchell's shooting at 29%. So, you know, Jay Crowder, as you said, you got to respect his ability to shoot. He's shooting at 29%. Even Joe Ingles is in a slump for him. He's at 38.5. You know, this is a guy who the last couple of years was at 44. So, right. You know, I think that they can create open shots for guys, but they're not making open shots. And Kyle Korver tends to make open shots.
Celtics had a nice win in New Orleans the other night, though. They needed that. And after the game, so that night, Jaylen Brown did not play, and they started Marcus Smart. And I don't want to go overboard, but it seemed to me like Kyrie like praised Marcus up one side and down the other about how happy he was. It was the best game they played in a while. What did you take away from that?
Yes. Well, so here's the thing. Kyrie has been terrific. And I mean, Brian, you've watched him his entire career in Cleveland too. He's playing with a purpose. He's playing so hard on the defensive end, almost as hard on the defensive end as on the offensive end. And as you know, when you're a guy like him and you're carrying the scoring load, sometimes that's hard to do, right? We've talked before about LeBron James and how he has to get his rest on defense sometimes to preserve himself for the long haul. Kyrie understands that, I think, the value of, I know he does because I've talked to him about the value of getting things going on the defensive end, and he knows his own defensive reputation. So Marcus Smart goes such a long way in helping Kyrie Irving in that regard. He is the toughest guy on the team. That's indisputable. He has, you know, his numbers are so modest. You can never measure him in numbers. He does all those little things, all the reasons the Celtics paid him. I like the idea of keeping him in the starting lineup. I think it's better for him and for Jaylen Brown. I think it's better for both of them. He's not a shooting threat, so the defense will treat him as such. We know that. And then what happens there is then, what, you know, on the one hand, Brad wants you to drive to the hole more, right? He keeps talking about how they're near the bottom of the league in free throw attempts. So if you keep Marcus in there, what's going to happen? The defenses will sag, and they're going to help out on those driving lanes. So that's going to be a problem. But so that's one of the issues for sure. But there's something about Marcus Smart that these guys really, really respect. And you can see it in how hard they play. And I've maintained this forever, that the most important minutes of a game, besides the final 2 minutes, are the first 7 minutes of every NBA game. I believe that.
Yeah, it's interesting how
games can... Discuss amongst yourselves.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Jackie, that's very interesting. I've never really had that discussion with anybody. I've thought about this in the past, like... The first 4 minutes of the second quarter are always like if you ever need to do something, if you ever, you know, need to take out the trash or, you know, you, want to, you know, make a run to your local bodega, you want to, empty the dishwasher, do it in the first, 4 minutes of the second quarter because, it's typically mostly backups on the court. The game pace slows way down. It's the least interesting part of an NBA game.
Man, that's JJ Barea time in Dallas.
Right. But it's interesting that you say that because so often, you know, the tone of games gets set that way, early on. That's interesting. I've been watching the Celtics with such fascination because they're so talented and they just haven't been able to squeeze much out of it. And Brad has been trying things. You know, he took Hayward out of the starting lineup.
Which was a good move. That was a very good move. And by the way, Hayward, at the end of the year, this talk about Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown or Aaron Baines, it'll all be moot because Gordon Hayward, if he continues to develop, and I believe he will, it's just going to take, you know, I was talking to Kyle Lowry about this, and he's like, Jackie, it'll take him the whole year. It takes that long to recover from a catastrophic injury, both mentally and physically. And I think he's right. But I think by the end of the year, Gordon Hayward's in your starting lineup.
Yeah, for sure. I thought that was an interesting little development. And Kyrie, it sounds like he wants to keep Marcus in the starting lineup. So
I don't think they will. I don't think they will. But I think the lineups will change because they have to, because the only person that's earned the right to be in the starting lineup every single night is Kyrie Irving, to be frank.
Right. Right.
And Al Horford.
I was going to say Al Horford. Yeah.
Yeah, I would include him as well. But, you know, Tatum, of course, is fantastic. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say I might have to throw Tatum in there too.
Well,
I know
Tatum
he hadn't been great this year, but yeah.
Well, I mean, his numbers are unbelievable. Again, it's why you can't just look at the numbers. Because one of the most significant things that I think happened this entire season so far, I was at that Knicks game, that 26-point blowout when they were booing the Celtics and telling Brad Stevens that he sucked. I never thought I would see that. And it happened.
Me either.
It happened. And that's boxing.
Usually it just happens
in
the NBA coaches' meetings. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
But the most the most important thing that happened in that game, and it was very underreported. I was not working that evening, believe it or not. I was there with my husband killing time to pick our daughter up from the airport the night before Thanksgiving. But the most underreported thing that happened in that game was in the third quarter, as they came out to start the third quarter, with 1 minute and 10 seconds left to gone in the third quarter, Jason Tatum came around and settled for a contested mid-range jump shot. And he got his fanny put on the bench for the next several minutes. And I watched him during the timeout. He was outside the timeout, standing outside the huddle with a towel around his neck, clearly embarrassed and ticked off and a little, you know, angry, and Jay Larinaga tried to reengage him and bring him back in the huddle, and Brad Stevens ignored him. And this happened through two timeouts, and then eventually, of course, you go back to Jason Tatum because he's, you know, he's going to be an elite player. His talent is, you know, it's there for us all to see, and he's a young player who's still learning. And so Brad Stevens ignored him, kept him out, and then gave him a chance to go back in, and Jason Tatum played his tail off. And I just, I was surprised it didn't get more play, honestly. Because
well, was Bontemps covering it for us?
No, Bontemps well, wasn't there that night.
Oh, well, give poor if he was, I would understand.
Let's give Bontemps some, let's give him some love. That dude is in, he's in Washington one night, he's in Toronto the next, he's back in Boston, he's in
Philly. I saw him in Memphis and Dallas this week.
I heard he carried you in Memphis this week.
That is completely false.
Anyway, I just think that was an underreported moment. It's something, if I were covering the game, that's what I would have written about, because we needed to see that from Brad Stevens. Not only did we need to see it, his players needed to see it. I don't care how good you are, if you don't do what we ask you to do, I've seen enough, and you're going to sit down.
I have an interesting Cajones Factor Player of the Month candidate who kind of is on the list because it goes against that. But we can get into that a little bit later.
Yes, we are at the end of the month. I haven't done any prep on Cajones Factor.
I don't expect. I will present three candidates and their cases, and you guys. Can, okay. You know, all you don't right. have
we'll
to do prep. I mean, you have to do your makeup, not any prep.
There you go.
Ooh,
that's right. So, well,
here we go.
Now that happens. Listen, I need it. I need the makeup. What do you want me to do? I got a red nose. So I wrote a story
and you
on
don't
LeBron
even
the
drink.
Lake.
And he doesn't even drink.
I know.
You don't even drink. You have a red nose.
I did a story on LeBron the Lakers yesterday that's, you know, maybe I'm in the L.A. bubble here, but is getting some play here. And Magic sort of tried to – well, he didn't try. He rebutted my story on radio today. But the story was not about – even though it turned into this, the story was not about LeBron looking at play calls. But I did have in the story that, you know, early in the season that LeBron – Luke would make play calls from the bench and LeBron would – just run whatever he wanted to when he was directing the offense. And then recently that Luke has just, you know, understood that he needs to trust LeBron to call the plays and give them the slack, which all of LeBron's coaches for the last decade have done.
Right.
And so he doesn't even really call plays according to their advantage. And by the way, I'm not getting this for myself. I'm getting this from the professionals who track this. And I've been talking to advanced scouts about it for weeks. I didn't just.
And by the way, I talked to one of the advanced scouts that you talked to for it. So I can confirm at least one of your sources. And we just discussed it the other night.
And I've talked to multiple scouts on it. And by the way, it's not just LeBron who would sort of do whatever he wanted. It was Rondo too. I just didn't put that in the
story. Well, ask Rick Carlisle about that.
Right. So I don't think that's a big deal, even though that story has gotten – that's what people have pulled out of it, and Magic said on the radio today it's not true. Well, I mean, the advanced scouts who I trust say that it's true. So I don't really care about that. The bigger issue, I think, for the Lakers is that LeBron is basically back to running a lot of point guard. And some of it's because Rondo's been out, and some of it's because LeBron's just going back to his comfort zone of what he wants to do. And I don't actually see that as a problem. LeBron, I watched teams struggle to learn how to build a team around LeBron. Back with the Cavs in the mid 2000s, you know, when they were running out Eric Snow with his starting point guard, and Eric was a great defensive player, but he couldn't shoot. It was like, oh, maybe we should get two shooters on the court with LeBron. And then, you know, later on they traded for Antoine Jameson and, you know, they signed Daniel Marshall, and they were like, boy, wouldn't it be great if we could get three shooters on the court with LeBron? And they, you know, they got Wally Szczerbiak, and they played Wally Szczerbiak at four so that they could have him with Mel Williams and Delonte West so they could get three shooters. And then when they got to Miami, Eric Spoelstra was like, how about we actually get four shooters? We make Chris Bosh a stretch center, and we play Shane Battier at stretch four, and we get four shooters with LeBron when we can. That didn't happen that often because Wade isn't a shooter, but they certainly tried to have as much shooting with LeBron. And then just about every transaction that the Cavs made when he came back to Cleveland was to get shooting. Right off the bat, getting Kevin Love, who's a stretch the four player, later getting Kyle Korver, Channing Frye, shooting. LeBron with specialists was the way he won MVPs, LeBron as the ball-dominating guy. So when he came to L.A., you know, I think he made it clear he really wanted some help with the playmaking because it was exhausting him, and he said he wanted to post up more. So, you know, they already had Lonzo Ball on the roster, so they went out and signed Rondo. They went out and signed Lance Stephenson. They didn't really elect to sign any shooting, unless you want to include re-signing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and he is sort of a hot and cold outside shooter. And so when LeBron is playing point guard, it goes against the way that the Lakers roster was built. And one of the people who is suffering from this especially is Brandon Ingram. And when you look at the stats, Brandon Ingram is shooting 44% when he's playing alongside LeBron. He shoots 56% when he's in the game and LeBron is out. He's going to score less with LeBron on the court. He's one of the top five scorers of all time. It's natural. But the net rating with LeBron and Ingram in the court together, and it's over 400 minutes, so it's a pretty significant rating, is negative 0.3. So essentially it's even when they're out there. When Ingram is on the court and LeBron is not, the net rating average per 36 minutes is plus 12. Ingram is just way better when LeBron's not on the court. And that to me is like the way bigger, right? To me, that's the way bigger topic than whether LeBron is looking at Luke Walton for play calls. And so that's what the Lakers are going to have to deal with.
And look, the question is this, is Brandon Ingram more valuable for the Lakers as LeBron's teammate or as a trade chip?
But it's got to be both. I mean, right now it's neither.
Well, I know that they were floating them in at least one a trade for, you know, well, I'll just go ahead and say it. I heard that he was brought up in the Jimmy Butler stuff. But
you think they? You know, I don't know if they actually offered that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I said brought up.
Don't get aggregated. Don't get aggregated.
Well, all right, fine. No aggregation. Although it kind of would make me feel important, and then I could go complain to the New York Times about it while I'm putting on my makeup.
Yeah. Right.
I was so sure that Brandon Ingram was going to be one of the people that benefited most from being on the floor with LeBron. Didn't you think that before the season started? I did.
I wondered about it because his best basketball in the NBA was last year during that stretch when Lonzo was out and when he had the ball in his hands a lot, when he was really a point forward. So I wondered, like, obviously, you're playing with LeBron, you're not going to have the ball in your hands a lot. You know, I wondered how he would adjust to that.
I watched a package over the summer after they after LeBron signed there. I watched a package of highlights that was like this long highlight package with Brandon Ingram. And granted, these are highlights that are pulled out. I did not.
How long could it have been?
It was pretty Just long. Kidding. He had a great second half last year. And all of the plays that he made that were highlight plays, and granted, not every play is a highlight play, were all plays where he was on the perimeter in ISO situations and made awesome stuff happen because he's got great length and he's a pretty good ball handler. And those opportunities are just not afforded when you're playing with LeBron as much. And that was one of the things. Like, it took Dwayne Wade a good season and a half, and not only to learn how to do it, but also to be willing to change his game. Yeah. And it's still one of the great,
think about what you're saying,
you know, things.
Yeah, but think about that, what you're saying. Dwayne Wade already won a championship without LeBron in Miami.
Right.
He was at a different point of his career. This is a young kid that has barely started his career. And you'd think LeBron should be trying to help him a little more. Is that so unfair to suggest? Why not?
Well, maybe that
succeed?
Does need to be suggested.
Help the kid succeed. Right. Yeah, all right. So
and to me, that's more important for Luke Walton and Magic Johnson to get the organization aligned in that direction than it is on a play call, because LeBron didn't take play calls from Ty Lue or David Blatt or anybody before. I mean, one of his most famous moments in Cleveland was overruling David Blatt on a last-second shot play. You know, this is who he is. So we'll keep an eye on that. Okay, McMahon, we're at the end of November.
Here we go.
Cajones Factor, Players of the Month.
Yes, I've got three candidates here. One, honestly, I'm not sure if he made more than one clutch shot the whole month, But how old is Jamal Crawford?
38.
I mean, the man.
Boy, he came in the league in 2001, I think.
He's damn near my age. He's old, right? And the man
hit like
a game-winning shot in an NBA game in like his 93rd year in the league. So automatically, Jamal Crawford, right. A Cajones Factor OG, he's going to be a nomination for Cajones Factor right. Player of the Month. Now, on the other end of the age spectrum, Luka Doncic, 19 years old, really struggles to grow a beard. I mean, it's scraggly. This kid obviously plays with absolutely no fear. I mean, the swagger, and I'm actually working on a story on this, the swagger's ridiculous. But not only does he play with no fear, I'll give you an example, though, of why this kid really entertains me. Dennis Smith Jr.'s got a hurt wrist, so they start a lineup where Luka's the starting point guard. It's Luka, three wings, and DeAndre Jordan. This is against the Celtics. He comes out, knocks down a three, has three quick assists, all for three-pointers. I mean, he's spectacular. And then tries to throw some crazy thread-the-needle, you know, would have been a highlight, but it's a turnover, terrible pass to Harrison Barnes. Rick Carlisle calls one of his pissed Rick timeouts where they storms on the court and slams his... You know, the T signal, you know, he's fired up. He barks at Luka. Luka doesn't even break stride, barks right back at him, goes over to the bench and, you know, goes back in and does whatever the hell he wants. That, my friends, and he's been good and clutch, but that, for a 19-year-old kid especially, is some pretty classic Cajones work. So, Luka Doncic, nomination number two.
I'm waiting for the guy who's going to win, who's the no-brain winner. Let's go.
Yeah, and I don't know how many times we've had a back-to-back Cajones Factor Player of the Month, but, I mean, Jimmy Butler goes to Philly. He's hit two game winners this month. His home debut for Philly, he has the backdoor cut for the layup to kind of put the dagger in the Jazz in the final minute. So, I mean, Jimmy Butler with the two game winners in his first couple weeks in Philly is going to be pretty tough to knock off the mountain.
Jackie, what's your thoughts?
Well, let's first of all, as much as I love Jamal Crawford, and I do love him, and he is just not only is he a great player, but all the effect he's had on so many of the young players in the league. But here's how I prick that balloon. Let's bust that balloon. He is 98th out of 101 shooting guards right now in real plus minus. He's at minus 3.8.
And he's still knocked down a game winner.
Okay, that's fine.
Jackie, look at the Wolves defense since he left and look at the Sixers defense since he got there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, he said Jamal Crawford.
I'm talking about Jamal Crawford.
Oh, Jamal Crawford. I said
that's
Jimmy Butler.
Jamal Crawford.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that was awfully
Butler.
Low,
no,
but okay.
No, no.
I apologize.
Oh,
No.
Jimmy Butler, admit it.
Hey, Jamal Crawford, it was more of, well, I felt like I had to give the guy a shout out.
And I don't blame it. I don't blame you. But we have to eliminate him immediately.
Okay. That's fine. But shout out to Jamal Crawford.
Right. That's fine. I'm voting for your boy Doncic because I am. And it's because of what you said. He is 19 years old. And he does not care what anybody on that court thinks. No matter how good you are, he was going at Kyrie Irving all night in that game referring to. You know, Kyrie would come down and do one of his dipsy doodles over him, and he'd come down and knock a three. And it was almost like he was saying, yeah, little guard, I got three, you got two. So he has got enough cojones to go all the way around. I'm voting for him this time.
Plus, he speaks Spanish.
he's got like this little edge to him even that whole thing, remember going back with the DeAndre Jordan rebound that DeAndre stole from him? Like, you're a rookie and DeAndre Jordan's been around forever. You should just let that happen. But no, he whips around and gives him the derisive little, what are you doing kind of thing. I'm like, that kid's got guts. I don't know if I always like it, but he's got him. He's got guts.
All right, well, I respect that. I'm going to just make a nomination to a team.
Oh.
And that team is the Los Angeles Clippers, number one in the West.
You know what? And they've got
Tobias Harris, baby.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, Lou Williams is certainly he's among the Cajones Factor leaders on an annual basis. And you know what's crazy? Lou Williams, as great as he is, reigning Sixth Man of the Year, he's not the best bench player on that team. Montrezl Harrell is a dude.
He's been great. Yeah. Now there's another good Cooney's choice.
Mm-hmm. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He had a terrific game last night. And I was talking to Sam Cassell.
But he's
going
to be up and down.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's true. Although I was talking to Sam Cassell, and Sam, like, just absolutely, you know, Sam's not a guy who just hands out praise.
Right.
Sam's not afraid to talk. Sam loves this kid like a son. He is so high on him. And he even says, look, he's doing all this stuff. Wait till he gets some strength on him and all this stuff. So, no problem with Jimmy Butler getting the award, but, if we can give it collectively to a team, the Clippers, and got a big road trip coming up. They play Sac tonight on the road, second night of a back-to-back. Then they come to Dallas over the weekend, McMahon, and then two I'll New Orleans there. And then two Memphis. So that'll be – let's see where the Clippers are in a week. But
you know what, though? If Jackie wants to give it to Luka, I mean, it would be the first major honor of Luka's career.
Wow. So you're gonna put your vote there.
I mean, look, you know, I personally give a lot more weight to Jackie's opinions than yours, so absolutely.
he showed up Harden quite a few times last night.
And, yeah, and look, there was another
one. He's got it, man.
There was another one with Joe Ingles, so that when they played in Utah, Joe didn't push him into the stands, but like Luka thought that he did, and, you know, and so he was pissed off. And this was when the Mavs beat the Jazz by 50, and Luka was just grinning and smiling every time he hit a shot over Ingles. He hits a buzzer beater. By the way, he hit another buzzer beater at the end of the first half, or first quarter, I think it was. Maybe it was first half last night, yeah. It was the same type thing, a buzzer beating three right before the half in Ingles' face, and he kind of barked at him a little bit. Salah Mejri, who hadn't played in the game, came over and was doing all kinds of barking for his former Real Madrid teammate. So yeah, the kid's got some. He's got some swag, some cojones, and all that. And
well, we've got some big games for him coming up. So let's see how he can keep it going. All right, so Cojones Factor Player of the Month, Luka Doncic. I learned how to say it on draft night, Jackie.
What an honor! For him.
That was quite a moment.
Rachel and I were talking about
Phil Doncic.
Today.
I like his stuff. Oh, where are you?
I would say we should come up with a trophy for this, but that probably wouldn't be appropriate.
That's true. It's a sort of a silent trophy.
Definitely not.
All right. Thank you for everybody for listening to us this week. We will have a good weekend. We will be back with you next week. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast.
With Brian Windhorst.